Good morning. I'd like to welcome everybody to this day-long seminar in honor of Mahaprajapati Gautami, who was the founder of the Bhikkhuni Sangha. And as the leader of the Sangha, was personally responsible for bringing many hundreds of women into monastic life and being their teacher and leading them to their awakening. The format that we have for today is very simple and shouldn't be too strenuous. We're going to invite each one of the monastics here on the stage to speak briefly about some Bhikkhuni teacher who was an inspiration for them. And also there will be plenty of time for discussion, and I encourage, if you find in your heart a woman who was a spiritual inspiration for you, you might also speak about that. Without further delay, I'm going to lead off by speaking about Patachara, who is one of the ancient Bhikkhunis who's remembered in the Tarigata, the verses of the enlightened women. Perhaps I'll start off by reading her Udana, the poem that she uttered about her awakening. Does anybody not know the story of Patachara? Okay. Here's her verse. Young Brahmins plow fields, sow seeds, nourish their wives and children, get wealthy. Why can't I find peace? I'm virtuous, comply with the teacher, not lazy or puffed up. One day, washing my feet, I watched the water as it trickled down the slope. I fixed my mind the way you'd train a thoroughbred horse. Later, taking my lamp, I enter my cell, sit on my bed, and watch the flame. I extinguish the wick with a needle. The release of my mind is like the quenching of the lamp. Oh, the nirvana of the little lamp. So nirvana literally means the cooling or the quenching. This is very typical of the verses of the ancient Bhikkhuni Arahantas, in that so often they come with details of the personal life, details that are so touching and so, you know, tiny things, putting out the lamp, using a needle, and washing the bowl, seeing the water flow into the sand and disappear. By comparison, a lot of the monks' verses in the Tarigata are more a little bit conceptual and abstract, speaking about the Dhamma qualities. So the story of Patachara is that she was a daughter of a wealthy family. Her parents, and this is like a fairy tale, her parents locked her in a room on the seventh floor to keep her safe from men, and they arranged a marriage for her to a wealthy young man. But Patachara fell in love with one of the servants, and she contrived to sneak away with this servant, and they went to a distant country and got married. So then she was having the happy life with her husband, until she became pregnant, and the Indian tradition would be for the woman to go home at the time of childbirth to be helped by her own mother, especially. So she wanted to go home. Her husband said no. But she ran away anyway, trying to get home. But her husband ran after her and found her and was begging her to come back. And just then she went into labor and had the baby. And they went back to their own home. No use to go to the parents. Then time went by. And later on, Patachara again was pregnant with a second child. And now she was insisting to go and be with her family for this second birth. Again, her husband resisted. She ran away with her, bringing her little toddler child and being close to birth. Her husband ran after her, again found her. And now a tremendous rainstorm came up. And Patachara started to feel the pain of labor and asked her husband to make a shelter so she could give birth. He went to do so, and while he was cutting some branches to make a little shelter, he was bit by a snake and died instantly. Meanwhile, Patachara went into labor and all by herself, with no help from anybody, gave birth to the second child. She searched to find her husband and found him dead. Now, overwhelmed with sorrow and remorse that she had caused the death of her husband, she thought, no use to go home, might as well go to my parents' house. And so she continued on. They come to a river, which is swollen in a flood state because of the rains. She's too weak to carry both of her children across the river. So she makes the toddler to stay on the one side and carries the infant over, sets the infant down on a bed of leaves, and then goes back to get her toddler. When she's in the middle of the river, Garuda bird, who's like an eagle type, a very large bird, comes and takes the infant, grabs the infant and flies away. She cries out. And then the toddler, hearing the voice of the mother, thinks that mother is calling. And so he goes in the river and gets swept away. Now Patachara has lost both of her children. She goes to continue on her way to her parents' house. She meets somebody along the way and inquires, where are you from? And the man says, I'm from Savatthi. And she said, oh, do you know this particular family? And he says, oh, don't ask about that family. And she said, oh, please, you have to tell me, this is my family. And he said, well, the house collapsed in the torrential storm, and your parents were killed. You can see the flame there in the distance, the smoke and the fire. That's the funeral pyre of your parents. So now Patachara descends into madness. She's running around naked in a complete mental breakdown. Somebody finds her and takes her to the place where the Buddha is teaching. And the Buddha gives the instruction that allows her to emerge from her madness. And then eventually she enters the Bhikkhuni order and becomes fully enlightened, as you can hear from her verse. My identification with Padacharya was because in my personal story, I also had a lot of losses that were leading up to my entering into monastic life. When I first encountered the Dhamma, I was very attracted to the monks and monastic life. It really seemed ideal to me, but I had responsibilities and I couldn't leave my responsibilities. During the years after I had encountered the Dhamma, over a period of several years, my younger brother passed away and my father passed away. With the inheritance that I received, I felt comfortable to give up my job in my condominium and undertake a long hike, thinking to make a decision about my life direction after that. But while during the hike, my mother passed away and my life partner passed away. So there I was. All my responsibilities had been taken away. I didn't leave my responsibilities. They fell away because of impermanence. And so this was the one thing that I kind of seemed to notice at the time about it's sort of like a particularly feminine aspect. In so many of the stories, we read that the monk or the young man finds that the family life is a kind of a prison. It's dusty and dry and unsatisfying, and the thought of entering into the family life, following in the footsteps of the family and taking up the family business and making a family and having those responsibilities feels like a kind of a prison, something really awful. And so then he wants to leave on a spiritual quest and go and wander. Whereas for the woman, it's like the home life or the life with the family is a kind of a heaven. Like being a young mother with her husband anyway. It seemed like a, you know, kind of like a, that's heaven. And she only wished that she could complete the picture by reconciling the break with the parents and to bring, you know, the multi-generational family together and to be able to have the parents and herself and her children all kind of like in one relationship. But then, because of impermanence, it's taken away. These archetypes or these stereotypes are actually not completely true. And now I feel that actually it's more that like men and women or the genders share some characteristics, and for example, Padacharya did run away. She did find her destiny, which was to be married, you know, within her social class, was kind of a cramped, dusty, unsatisfactory, and she was not satisfied to take what fate gave her. She wanted the freedom. And likewise, some of these characteristics of, like, being very happy to be sort of like ensconced in this household life with these domestic virtues, those are qualities that are admired by us, but also if you look at how the bhikkhus live, the characteristics of a really good bhikkhu have a lot of domestic aspects. I'm going to read here from the Greek mythology about the goddess Hestia, who's the goddess of the home and the hearth. She's the goddess of the hearth, home, architecture, domesticity, family, and the state. She's personified by the fire burning in the hearth of every home in Greece. And so that would be maybe a parallel to the Brahman class, which keeps a fire burning continuously in the home. And so then in Indian culture, this keeping the hearth going is not a feminine thing or a masculine thing, it's a Brahman thing, or maybe it belongs to the priestly class. She's described as kind, forgiving, discreet, with a passive, non-confrontational nature, just like an ideal bhikkhu. we do see that when we enter the monastic life in a certain way, we're stepping out of the stereotypes. The bhikkhu has to be the upatak and take care of his teacher, and has to learn this very calm, deferential manner in monastic life, and has to learn to become the peacemaker, which might be considered as, in the traditional role, a role for a woman. And likewise, the bhikkhunis are living in our own communities, and so we have to be able to establish the law, and we have to be able to fix things that break, and do the painting and the lawn mowing and the chainsawing and the and the building. and so we leave behind those, some of the traditional things that might be the role of women. It's true that it, in some ways, our bhikkhuni precepts are more detailed than the bhikkhu's precepts in certain regards. And it's possible that as women, there's a more, it's like a social interpersonal role for like interpersonal regulation. Mm-hmm. And then it seems almost as if some of the concerns that were invented, that were raised by the bhikkhunis, then subsequently became adopted by the bhikkhus. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we have a particular rule about using the sitting cloth. And the bhikkhus didn't have that rule, but now all the bhikkhus use the sitting cloth in the same way that the bhikkhunis do. So that's this the angsa, which is like when we're not wearing our upper robe, the small cloth that you see the bhikkhunis wear. Mm-hmm. That's something that was first a characteristic of the bhikkhunis, but now all the bhikkhus is the same kind of thing. So in that kind of way, there is an adaptation. Anyways, I offer this brief reflection about Patachara with the idea that when we see somebody or hear of somebody who had some similarity in her story, is the same as our own experience, and we could see that they were able to make it, then that's something that that makes it possible. And so that maybe the most important thing that we have to do as leaders is simply to be spiritually successful and to be ourselves. And then if somebody else can identify with that, then they could think that it's possible that they could also can make it and be successful spiritually. could take 5 or 10 minutes if anybody has a comment or a question to ask.
I do. When you experience the losses, when things fell away from your life the way they did, you said that before those things happened, you were drawn to this life. But you hadn't made a decision yet. And so this hike was supposed to be opening your heart, your mind, yourself, to have the answer come to you. With such intense loss, how were you able to hear that message? Because in my head I'm thinking the heartache and the heartbreak and everything else, like Padichara, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, yeah. Things happened. And the nervous breakdown can occur. But you're very strong and you're very and you didn't have a nervous breakdown. How did you hear this message?
For me, it so happened that after when I was doing that long hike, the hike, instead of being 1 year, it ended up being 3 years. And during the winter months, my partner and I were staying at the monastery, and as a resident, lay residents, and so then, especially after my partner passed away, the monks were my family, and they say that in a time of grief, don't change anything, or don't make big decisions to change things. So not changing things meant to go to the monastery. That's what I was doing before, and so I just did that again. And then that spring, I was thinking, okay, I didn't want to make a big change, so I just put on my backpack and finished the hike by myself. But I had a lot of a difficulty at that time with afflictive emotional states, and the major thing that makes me a good teacher now is because while I was staying there at the Bhavana Society, eventually I tried this, I tried that, I did a lot of experiments and investigations until finally I had my spiritual breakthrough that allowed me to be able to see the way, not to be trapped in afflictive states, but to be able to escape from those states.
This morning, you had disclosed that you were having to give up some books that you had carried for many years, and they were almost like mementos or some physical representative of your past. And it was like, now that's starting to make sense. It's like this gradual letting go. I mean, some of it was like, it's a Nietzsche, so we have to let that go. We can't hang on. So then each stage of the way you're able to shed more. The person's able to shed more. I mean, someone may pass away, but we may psychologically be hanging on to them, mm-hmm. and not wanting that to be a reality.
Those books are affected by mildew, but they've been treated for mildew, but they still have a kind of a musty stinky kind of a smell that I'm not able to tolerate.
Yeah.
But if anybody's able to tolerate
to a good
mom,
those smells, and I'd be happy to have you take them away. It includes the thesaurus that was given to my father by his co-workers when he got his first job in
1945. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it includes a couple of really high quality, expensive bird guides. Okay, so let us... we've got a minute, 3 minutes left. Any more? Is there another comment?
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.